Today, the Mysterium of Ethereum. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined by Caroline Butler, the CEO of BTC Markets. Hi there.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very good. I think you like this title.
I did. That made me giggle.
Look, the interesting thing, we've had a conversation about Bitcoin, we've had a conversation about Ripple XRP. Now, Ethereum, and I guess that people probably will have heard of the name, but that's about it. So let's unwrap Ethereum and try and get to understand what that digital thing is.
Sure. So where Bitcoin will be a cryptocurrency, Ethereum has different kind of qualities or different kind of uses. It would be what you consider the utility player, the plumbing of the new blockchain economy. It powers a broad number of different platforms that are coming through, including sectors such as decentralized finance, which is a burgeoning sector and increasing in usefulness, but also can be used in cases such as identity protocols or for esports or e-gaming, as it's known. So there's a wide variety of different uses. Ethereum itself has only been around for 5 years compared to Bitcoin's 10. But as I say, in that time, the use of its protocol has been widely adopted, and it's the most used protocol for the new blockchain economy.
Right. And my understanding is that even some of the central banks around the world are experimenting with Ethereum protocols to drive some of their experiments.
Yes, absolutely. But it's not just even central banks. I know that there was a news piece published today that Visa are advertising for a blockchain expert to join its cross-border payments team, possibly to rival our good friends at Ripple. Who's to tell? But I think it really speaks to the use cases and the functionality of the Ethereum protocol. It very much uses smart contracts, which is, I suppose, where you automate the actioning of contracts, say movement of funds or whatever the particular details are, or in the case of identity, allowing people access to the documents that you store on the blockchain. So there's lots of different applications, but again, only 5 years old, so it's so much more to be done with it. And also with Ethereum, one of the key points, as it is with many of these blockchain, with all of these blockchain protocols, it is decentralized by nature. So although Vitalik Buterin is the brains behind it originally, is still very much involved in it, the fundamentals of it are dispersed worldwide as decentralized protocol. And indeed, even the Ethereum Foundation, which kind of looks after and supports a lot of the Ethereum-based projects, itself explicitly states that it does not control or kind of dominate, I suppose, the development of Ethereum and its use cases.
Right. So the foundation essentially safeguards the fundamental standards and effectively the nature of the protocol, but the idea is that it's available and accessible and can be applied and used, and of course it underpins by the blockchain, isn't it?
Yes, so it is. It's built on Ethereum blockchain, but the foundation itself, as I say, it's very clear that it doesn't want to be the central body, the only one, that there are others that are out there that are supporting Ethereum projects. But really interesting. So I suppose which kind of brings us on to the big news point with Ethereum at the moment, which is its evolution from Ethereum version 1 to Ethereum 2.0.
So what's the difference between 1 and 2?
Right, well, this is where it gets really interesting. So as I say, it's only been around for about 5 years, so still very much in its early stages. And this kind of evolution point was something that was discussed even from its inception. What every blockchain does has, and it's powered by it, what's called a consensus mechanism, which is where each of their different blockchains agree that the data that they have in this particular block is the truth. And that's it, because once it goes in, it's immutable, it can never be changed. And how they reach that consensus, that agreement, is their consensus mechanism. So with Bitcoin and with some of the other better known blockchain protocols, they use what's called proof of work, which is that mining that we've heard of, and the miners and using the large computer resources to power it. Proof of stake is another type of consensus mechanism, and this is where Ethereum is moving to. So instead of having to use computers to mine the new blocks, instead you basically put a stake in, which is effectively skin in the game, that says, okay, I'm putting in this resource, which says the version of the block that I'm putting forward will be the truth and that you can all rely on it. And the reason you can rely on it is because I've put my money in or my stake into the pot as to back that up. So that's at a very, very high level. And there are a few different protocols that already use this proof of stake, but Ethereum being kind of the big mama of the utility world, moving to it is significant. Now, the reason why they're moving to this as opposed to staying with proof of work is because of two major issues. One is around scalability and one is around accessibility. So with proof of work, the scalability issue is that all of the blocks that are mined are being mined sequentially. So you can't jump the queue. So you have to wait your turn. And also each of the data blocks are limited by how much data that they can have in them. So if you've got a large backlog of transactions to be processed and put in the block, they all just have to sit and wait their turn. So the new Ethereum 2.0 is to respond to that by creating what they're calling sharding. So rather than basically going from single road, they're going to a multi-lane highway, which I think is a really good way of describing it. So before you just have that one proof of work lane where transactions are being processed. With sharding, they're basically going to split it out into 64 different strands, and each of those strands will be processing simultaneously. So it's really going to open up that scaling issue that they spoke about. So that's one part of it. And then the next part of it is to do with accessibility. With proof of work, as we said, it requires an awful lot of computational resources to run these what they call mining pools. That by itself, it limits the amount of people that can come in and join because there's high cost of entry, but also centralizes the whole power structure, which is the very point that blockchain is supposed to be moving away from. So when you have proof of stake, it's literally going to be about whoever has skin in the game. They can let anyone can participate. And there's another example, say with another protocol, Tezos, where you can effectively do that already. So even from the smallest holder can effectively become part of staking. That's a whole other day's kind of topic to deep dive into that, so that you get the sense of it. So the whole point of this is that they're going to move away from that more tightly controlled centralized mining pool into a far broader, anyone can join in kind of staking and participate there, and then also that increased amount of scalability. So going from a single road to a multi-lane highway. So that's at a very, very high level, the kind of differences that are coming up. And the thing with Ethereum 2.0 is that although it's starting off with just this one particular aspect at the moment, there's so much more that's coming, as I say, because of it. As you can tell, again, another subject I'm really excited about.
The point there, of course, is that what's now happening is it's allowing it to be able to do more transactions, more throughput, a lot quicker, a lot more flexible, a lot more agile, right? And that's, of course, the critical evolutionary point to really getting it to become more utilitarian, more widely used.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the point to me, for the Bitcoin with their proof of work protocol, you know, have coming up with ideas like the Lightning Network and where they're trying to tackle that issue themselves. So it's not like this is the only show in town, but this is the one that Ethereum is pivoting towards. Again, and this is something, because of its decentralized nature, it was originally mooted to start what they call phase zero, which is the beacon chain, the first of those sharding chains to begin the proof of staking. That was supposed to start in January of this year. It was also supposed to be started this month. However, those dates keep on getting pushed and pushed. Quite understandably, when you're trying to run, anyone who's ever run a project will tell you it can be quite challenging, but also the fact that it's so geographic spread, I'm sure that there's a lot of challenges with that, but I appreciate their commitment to getting it right. I think that they understand the importance of doing this, do it once and do it right.
So would there be many retail holders of Ethereum? I'm thinking, you know, many individuals hold bitcoins. What about Ethereum?
Yes, absolutely. Well, as I say, it's the second largest market cap, only to Bitcoin. It's a very popular coin, I suppose, because people understand the utilitarian aspect to it. One assumes, I mean, not to give investment advice or anything like it, but for, you know, it is a very popular coin in similar to Bitcoin. And I think too, where this is interesting is because it gives an investor or somebody who wants to hold the coin a different exposure to the blockchain economy, which for me, I personally find that very obviously interesting. You know, to kind of see where this is being built, and again, kind of getting that sideline view as to where our digital economy is moving. So platforms, so protocols like Ethereum help give us exposure to that.
Hmm. And as we said earlier on, so some of the large financial players around the world are also very interested in Ethereum, actually more so than perhaps Bitcoin.
Well, true. Well, I think, again, that smart contract element is really interesting if you're looking at financial settlement and that decentralized finance application that Ethereum has, where it's kind of a set and forget, if you like, for financial contracts. Coming from the banking world, an awful lot of it, while automation is fantastic, an awful lot of that is still people-driven and still, you know, prone to human error. Whereas if you take the human out and put the machine in, it's a protocol that once it's done, and it's just going to roll ad nauseum until somebody pulls the plug. So I think there's a lot that's of interest there, that the speed and the efficiency gains that the financial system can get from that is really significant and really important. So something like a decentralized finance, which again kind of takes that step away from keeping it all controlled and then opens up the wider dispersal of it, really fascinating. It's just wonderful, as I say, to be in the sidelines to it all.
Yes, and it makes quite interesting discussions, of course, because there are central banks who would like to and want to run towards digital, but also want to keep some control. And there are other people saying, no, the future should be completely decentralized and devolved, and there should be no centralized control. It seems to me that Ethereum can play in almost both modes.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Ethereum is used to underpin a couple of stable coins, which I'm not sure, you know, if that's a concept that you particularly want to discuss. But stable coins, such as one of the better known ones would be Tether, or what Facebook are looking to do with Libra, which is where, say, with Tether, where it's one-to-one with the US dollar. But Tether is digital. Tether can move around the world, you know, like any other digital asset would do, backed by reserves of US dollar. So in effect, it's kind of like edging forward towards that central bank digital currency, in kind of proof case that it works and that demand is there. And all of that technology for a Tether, for example, is built using Ethereum. So all those use cases just absolutely waiting to be explored. And certainly, as I think we kind of discussed before, about the interest central banks have in moving towards that digital currency and what it can do for the global economy.
Mm, yeah, well, I suspect that the momentum is even increasing, you know, as the role of central banks and their role in stimulus and all those things continue to enhance. It looks to me as though they're driving their digital agenda even more quickly as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. That the rest of the economy is moving towards this increasing digitalization, and certainly for us, you know, we're all working from home through COVID. Those of us who are fortunate to be able to do so, and so that's really driving the use of digital channels in a way that previously we didn't really necessarily have the same push to do so, but we absolutely do now. And I think it's just such a natural and easy evolution to then go, okay, well, let's look at digital currencies and let's see what else we can digitize and to keep kind of chains of commerce, you know, going. I know, say, for example, here in Australia, it's one of the most popular marketplaces for contactless payments. So, you know, moving to digital seems to be, again, I guess, was a natural evolution point.
Mm, yeah, and as we've said before, you know, there's going to be lots of different variations in digital options and alternatives. Some will win, some will lose. But my sense is that Ethereum is actually relatively well placed compared perhaps to some of the others that are out there. One of the interesting cross points here is to do with esports and the fact that Ethereum has a role to play there too.
It does indeed. Esports itself, such an exciting sector, also going through its own global digital growth at the moment. And we're seeing a lot of crossover between the use of digital assets and that e-gaming sector. For example, there's a platform called Engine, which launched Engine Coin based on that Ethereum protocol. And what it does, it works within the esports e-gaming industry. And what it does, it embeds its engine coin into digital assets that can then be moved around using on the blockchain. So say, for example, you're a gamer and in your gaming arsenal, if you like, in your wallet that you would have on, say, for example, on your mobile phone, you own a sword. You can embed that sword with this engine coin, which gives it a fiat value, because the engine coin is traded on the platform, so it gives it fiat value. But you can also use that sword across any of the blockchain games that you use, that you're a member of. So while you use it in one, you can use it in two, and use it in three, which is fantastic, you know, if you're into esports, to have that you know, being able to use those multiple assets on multiple platforms. But also because of the fact that it's embedded with the engine coin, it also means that you can buy and sell other assets too. So all of a sudden it goes from just being a computer game that you play with yourself and play with your friends, because it's gone digital and global, you can play it worldwide, you can move it across loads of different games, and you can also buy and sell new ones to add to your collection, which is fantastic and such a lovely evolution of the game and engagement with the game that sends a community across the game, and that whole kind of virtual world kind of being brought in into our daily lives. So it's fantastic. So that's Engine, that's just one example that's being used. I mean, there's so many other different examples. I know, for example, Litecoin are partnering with Atari, so you can use Litecoin, Litecoin would be similar to Bitcoin. You can use Litecoin then as a payment to buy the new virtual computing system, which is brilliant to see that crossover between the esports and the digital assets world. But there's heaps and heaps of examples. I think there's such a really clear use case crossover between blockchain digital assets and the esports e-gaming world.
Mm. And so I understand you can even, you know, if you're in a game, you can effectively acquire additional capability by paying digitally for it and then
that's right.
Running with it, right? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And also they can do esports tournaments that are being powered by cryptocurrency, and people can be paid in cryptocurrency, and you can do all kinds of side betting, which I personally don't go into, but whatever you're into yourself, there's loads of different use cases for it. And again, kind of tip of the iceberg. But I love the fact that I can buy and sell these, you know, like my sword, if you like, and just transfer it and across different games, and because everyone's got their favorites that they use, and I just love that aspect to it from a personal point of view anyway. I think it's fantastic.
No, it's very, very interesting, and many people perhaps who've never really, you know, gone into this sphere won't understand just how big the whole e-gaming thing is. It's massive, isn't it? There are millions and millions who spend many hours in the digital world, as it were, and are very much known in that sphere. And of course, many of them also stream direct to YouTube as they play.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I mean, if you look at, say, for example, about Engine and Engine Coin, they've partnered up with Minecraft. So you can now use that example as I gave in the Minecraft world. Minecraft has got like 126 million monthly users. And that's considered niche. So I mean, I know my nephew absolutely loves Minecraft, is mad about it. It's extremely popular. And so when you're bringing in that functionality into such mega games as those, it's just, you know, it's inevitable where all this kind of technology is going to take us. Again, you know, I mean, there's others out there, but that's just the one example that kind of comes to mind, you know, kind of as we're discussing it. But yes, no, it's just absolutely fantastic to see such great use cases.
Well, it's fascinating, and you know, every time I speak with you, I always get a glimpse of another digital future beyond the one that I'm sort of comfortable with and familiar with. That's why I enjoy speaking with you, and hopefully we can have another conversation down the track a bit and take the journey even further, because the point is, the digital world is evolving very fast. It's evolving into multiple different facets and the opportunities, and there are some risks there as well, of course, but it really is something that people need to get up to speed with, isn't it?
Well, for me, it's breathtaking. I mean, I wake up every morning and I log into my email and I look at all the news digests and all the different news sources that I have based around digital assets and crypto. And it's, as I say, it's breathtaking. I can't keep up. Which is wonderful to always feel like you go in and you're inspired every day by something new from your sector. And coming from more traditional sectors, that wasn't always the case. So it's really good to have that experience now. Absolutely.
It's great to be right in the middle of it at the right time, and nobody quite knows where this is going to end up, but I think it will be an interesting future.
Absolutely, I second that completely.
Thank you very much for your time today, and look forward to the next one.
Thank you very much. Talk to you again. Bye-bye now.
Bye.